Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We invited Congressman Duncan Hunter and his opponent to be interviewed on our show. The congressman's campaign has not responded, but we're pleased that his opponent, James Kimber, did join us in our studio. So today you'll hear our in-depth interview taped last week with Kimber, a veteran and medical professional, on his goals if elected to represent voters in the 50th Congressional District. But first, we have some important news bulletins. We have some good news about those CAL FIRE planes that have been grounded ever since an air tanker crashed in Yosemite. Hear why San Diego's Mayor Kevin Faulkner is proposing mandatory water restrictions. Learn about a Supreme Court decision that means wedding bells will be ringing for same-sex couples in many more states. Find out where you can go to vote early for the November election. And hear how you can bid on dozens of horses and other animals being auctioned off Saturday by the county with bids as low as $100. Learn why several Republican central committees in California are facing fines from the Fair Political Practices Commission for money laundering. And on Destination East County, we'll tell you about all the most fun festivals and events coming up this week and next. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. Amid peak fire season, a fatal CAL FIRE air tanker crash grounded all of California's 22 S2T air tankers. That was troubling news to many here in San Diego County, where the two worst wildfires in California's history both occurred in late October. On Tuesday, an air tanker battling the Dog Rock fire in Yosemite National Park crashed, killing the pilot. The tankers are capable of carrying up to 1,200 gallons of fire retardant each. These are vintage Vietnam-era aircraft, and the wings were made to fold up when they were on aircraft carriers. The fleet was grounded to allow for inspections to make sure that there were no structural problems. And the good news is that no structural problems or age-related issues in the aircraft were found. And as of 11 a.m. today, CAL FIRE's Battalion Chief Nick Schuler has told East County Magazine the entire fleet of air tankers is back in the air. Chief Ken Pimlott, CAL FIRE's director, says the crash underscores just how inherently dangerous wildland firefighting is, and the job is further compounded this year by extreme fire conditions.
San Diego City residents may soon have mandatory water restrictions. Mayor Kevin Faulkner has proposed that the city move to drought alert status. If approved by the City Council, drought alert status would impose limits on when residents can wash cars, water lawns, gardens, and other plants. Mayor Faulkner thanks San Diegans for their efforts to conserve water. San Diegans cut water use by 5.7% in September, but that's not enough. The mayor said that unless consistent rainfall returns by next year, things could go from bad to worse. Reservoirs that supply the city of San Diego are at just 44% of capacity, and the San Diego County Water Authority is at 37%. Statewide, 81% of water agencies have already instituted water use restrictions. Outdoor watering accounts for up to 80% of urban water use in many areas. Starting in November, water districts will be required to report how much water residents are using per person per day. Felicia Marcus, chair of the State Water Board, says conserving water is crucial. Every gallon saved today postpones the need for more drastic, difficult, and expensive action should the drought continue into next year, she says. She adds, at a time when hundreds of thousands of acres of farmland lie fallow, communities across the state are running out of water. Fish and wildlife are suffering, and no one knows whether it will rain or snow much this winter. It makes good common sense for urban Californians to do what they can to use less water. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Capitol Report. Wedding bells will soon be ringing for same-sex couples in many more states after the U.S. Supreme Court denied hearings on all appeals that are pending. American Civil Liberties Union attorney James Essex called the decision a watershed moment for the entire country. The High Court refused to hear appeals of same-sex marriage rulings in five states where appellate courts had ruled that bans on same-sex marriages are unconstitutional. However, the decision is expected to actually expand same-sex marriage rights to a total of 11 states that are all under jurisdiction of those federal appeals courts that ruled same-sex marriage bans to be unconstitutional. Add those to the number of states where same-sex marriage already is legal, including California, and the U.S. will likely soon have 30 states, a majority, where same-sex marriage is protected. Both supporters and opponents of same-sex marriage had urged the Supreme Court to decide whether or not same-sex marriage is a constitutional right, and both sides have expressed surprise at the High Court's action. Tony Perkins, president of the Conservative Family Research Council, denounced the decision. "This judicially-led effort to force same-sex marriage on people will have negative consequences for our republic," he says, "not only as it relates to natural marriage, but also undermining the rule of and respect for law." But Evan Wolfson, president of Freedom to Marry, believes the court should have gone farther in order to legalize same-sex marriage in states where it has not yet been approved by state legislatures, voters, or the courts. Wolfson says the decision by the Supreme Court leaves in force five favorable marriage rulings reached in three federal appellate courts, ensuring the freedom to marry for millions more Americans around the country. But, he adds, we are one country with one constitution, and the court's delay in affirming the freedom to marry nationwide prolongs the patchwork of state-to-state discrimination and the harms and indignity that the denial of marriage still inflicts on too many couples in too many places. Now, the court could still opt to rule on the constitutionality of same-sex marriage in the future. Some legal experts have suggested that the High Court might take a future case if a different appellate court issues a ruling contrary to those that have already weighed in on the issue. Former Utah Supreme Court Justice Dahlin Oaks, an elder in the Mormon Church, said church members should accept unfavorable results graciously and practice civility, also rejecting persecution based on sexual orientation. Same-sex marriages are already commencing in some states, and others are expected to follow soon.
Voters interested in casting their ballots early for the November 4th gubernatorial general election can now do so at the County Registrar of Voters' new office at 5600 Overland Avenue in Kearny Mesa. Early voting will continue from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. The office also will be open 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on November 1st and November 2nd for weekend voting and until polls close at 8 p.m. on Election Day. The registrar is also offering another option starting October 27th through November 3rd. Voters will be able to swing by any one of 15 locations located throughout the county to drop off their completed mail ballots. An insert with locations and additional information has been added to each mail ballot packet. Voters can still request a mail-in ballot until October 28th. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Over two dozen neglected horses rescued by County Animal Services are now healthy enough to be put up for adoption this Saturday. Animal control officers seized 31 horses and other livestock from a property in Valley Center on August 23rd. One horse, a pregnant mare, gave birth to a foal 1 week after she was rescued, and they would both be available for adoption. Photographs and descriptions of the horses can be found at the San Diego Department of Animal Control's website at sddac.com. You can also visit these horses at the County Animal Shelter in Bonita, Saturday starting at 9 a.m. Potential adopters must first complete a horse adoption application and submit it to the staff at the facility in Bonita by 10 a.m. Saturday. Those with approved applications can take part in an auction shortly after. The minimum bid for each horse is set to start at $100. Three of the mares have foals, and they will be auctioned as a set of two for the same minimum bid. Three llamas and four Dexter miniature cattle rescued during the August 23rd seizure are being housed at the animal care facility in Carlsbad, and they are also available for adoption. Sealed bids for those animals will be accepted during the Bonita auction on Saturday.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. This week, we have invited both Congressman Duncan Hunter and his opponent, James Kimber, to be on the show. And thus far, we have not heard back yet from Congressman Hunter, but we are delighted to welcome James Kimber to the show. James, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Miriam. James is a Navy veteran, Navy corpsman, and a physician's assistant. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself, James, and what made you decide to run?
Sure. I'm originally from Long Beach, California, but I've been in San Diego since 1982. I joined the Navy here in San Diego and started my naval career here. And 20 years later, I retired here in San Diego and decided to stay. I currently practice on medical staff at Palomar Medical Center. I'm in neurosurgery, and I've been in the healthcare field for the past 30 years. Military is not uncommon to my family. My dad and grandfather were both Navy doctors in World War II. So it's a question that's asked a lot, why am I running for office given my background, never having held office before? And simply it's because I see the inaction going on within Congress. There are a lot of issues that are facing this country, and some of them very serious right now. Yet I think Congress has really stepped back, and they're not working together mostly.
Yeah, a major partisan divide back there. Now, that brings me to my first question. You and your opponent are both military veterans. That might be the only thing you have in common. It's a race where we have very, very diverse opinions, as listeners will soon hear. But do you believe that enough is being done to help our returning military veterans and their families? And if not, what more do you believe needs to be done specifically?
Right. This is one of the reasons that sort of drew me into running for office is I do not believe that our military veterans are being looked after adequately, specifically when it comes to issues pertaining to mental health, the high suicide rate amongst our veterans, the homelessness issue, lack of job transitioning. I mean, many military members are trained in very specific jobs or trades, yet it doesn't transition into a civilian job. We all know about the VA debacle or the backlog within the VA and the problems that it has suffered this year, but that, too, is not a new problem, and I do believe that somebody needs to address these. Representative Tulsi Gabbard out of Hawaii actually introduced a bill a couple of months ago which would allow veterans who have served to get care on the outside, because right now there's such a huge backlog, and I've heard suggestions or answers or even Congress voted on to fund more money to build more VA centers and hire more doctors. But a lot of us, particularly those of us who serve in the healthcare field, know that many of them could be taken care of at civilian facilities. That doesn't mean all problems. Certainly there are things such as mental health or traumatic brain injury or post-traumatic stress disorder that are more specific to be treated at a VA center. But I know there are solutions, there are answers to veterans' problems, but for some reason it's just not being addressed.
Okay. Let's talk about jobs more broadly, not only for veterans, but we have a very high joblessness rate in East County, this portion of the district particularly, places like El Cajon that has the highest poverty rate in San Diego. Congressman Hunter, during the debate last week, said in the debate that it is not government's job to create jobs. In his view, he thinks that should be left to the private sector and that government should just get out of the way of the job creators, so to speak. You've indicated that you do believe the federal government sometimes can have a role in turning the economy around with job creation. Can you give us a few examples? And I'm wondering specifically if you have ideas to bring jobs to your district, including East County.
Sure. I mean, to go back to Mr. Hunter's comments, I agree that government is not the answer for everything. But to say that government doesn't create jobs, well, I think most people are familiar with the fact that government did authorize the production of 300 new tanks at a cost of half a billion dollars. And I think there are a few people that would disagree that that was a jobs program, meaning creating jobs just to have jobs, because even the Secretary of the Army did not want those tanks. Yet why, if we're going to spend that money, why aren't we investing in real jobs? So what would I see? I see here in East County, when it comes to renewable energy, such as solar production, I think that there are many – I know there are many companies here in San Diego, but if we could, as Mr. Hunter suggested, incentivize or subsidize some of the commercial industries within San Diego or commercial owners, help them get the solar in, so we could build this manufacturing base here in San Diego.
There you go, and put solar on rooftops, parking lots, that sort of thing.
Absolutely, but I mean, not just solar. I mean, another industry that I see is on the verge of really exploding is the UAV, or more commonly referred to as drones.
Yeah, fascinating technology, and one of those technologies that has some wonderful and amazing applications, as well as some questions that have been raised about others.
They do. Most people, when you mention the word drone, they really think of it as a military application only and are not aware of the many civilian applications that are used. Just last year, 43% of all UAVs or drones were used in agriculture.
Interesting. And we have a lot of agriculture right here in San Diego.
Agriculture is a huge industry within the 50th District. But just recently, David Branson of Virgin Airlines made a large investment in a local company called 3D Robotics. Mm-hmm. And this could be what I would call the new Qualcomm of San Diego.
Very interesting. So what? So why not bring those out to East County?
Why Absolutely.
Does Poway and, you know, these other coastal areas and North County areas seem to get all the high-tech stuff and East County gets left out?
Absolutely. We should be bringing high-tech out here to East County. I'm sure there's commercial property that would fit right into them. Plus, they have the space that they're going to need to be able to develop and test this type of equipment.
The next topic is healthcare. And again, this is an area where you and Congressman Hunter sharply disagree. And it's also an area where you actually have a lot of firsthand expertise as a medical professional yourself. Now, Congressman Hunter has said that he wants to eliminate the federal health care reforms or Obamacare. He's voted against it many times, even voted to basically defund and shut down the government to try to block Obamacare. I'm curious, first of all, can you tell our listeners what you think about Obamacare and what further improvements to our health care system you believe are needed? Because I think even people who support it have said it's certainly not a perfect system.
Right. And I said that on Friday. It is not the end-all, be-all. It's not the fix-all. But it is certainly better than the way we were doing business. I said before, and I'll say it again, that I stand for and support universal health care. Mm-hmm. But that being said, we currently have the Affordable Health Care Act, which, contrary to what some people say, including Mr. Hunter, it is working. I find it unfortunate for somebody like himself who has never practiced health care to make the statements that he has, to make these assumptions about surely there are people who did not get to keep their doctors. There are people who have had to pay higher premiums. But when you look at the vast majority of people who are now receiving care who could never, ever afford it or weren't able to get it because of pre-existing conditions. In the beginning of this year, probably in the first 2 months, I saw more new patients than I did of all of last year. I would say a day doesn't go by when I'm in my clinic that I don't see a new patient that's telling me their story about how they've waited for this day to be able to afford health care because they have a condition they couldn't get treated for the past 3 years, 4 years.
So your approach would not be to throw it out. You support universal health care, which is actually more comprehensive than what we have. And if that couldn't be gotten through Congress, do you see would your approach be to sort of work to improve and tweak the Obamacare system we have rather than throw it out? And I believe Mr. Hunter's plan was, well, let's let everybody compete for health care across state lines. I'm not quite sure what that meant. He cited Alabama as cheaper rates. Does that mean we go to Alabama if we need a brain tumor removed or what?
Well, I mean, when you're talking about health care, again, when you speak of a free market system, health care should be a right. Okay, health care does not need to be a for-profit industry. And to my point, just recently there was an article in the New York Times about an assistant surgeon who, because he was out of network or the patient was out of his network, billed $117,000 for a procedure that the surgeon only collected $6,000 for. So that's your free market system. Now, for maybe people like Mr. Hunter and other people who are in that 1% or in the higher tax bracket, I'm sure a free market system works very well.
He has his federal health care. He's got that fully paid plan and
I do
VA health care.
I have, and I've earned that.
Which
it is a great system, but that is universal health care. Absolutely. Yeah. If you look at the vast majority of the people, they would not be able to afford a free market system, which is why we have the Affordable Health Care. Again, it is not the perfect solution, but we can't go back to millions and millions of people without insurance.
Another difference between the two of you is over philosophy of government. Representative Hunter wants government to get out of the way of entrepreneurs. He said in the debate that he believes we need to lower the corporate tax rate to stop the corporations from going overseas. And he also wants to eliminate things he considers to be excess spending, including things like the Department of Education, for example. What is your view on the appropriate role of government, and how does it differ from your opponents?
Well, again, I mean, I'll echo some of the things that he had said as well, that government is not there to solve everybody's problems. But the simple fact is, Mr. Hunter and those like him were elected to do a job, and this is not an excuse not to do their job anymore. Yes, the government is not going to fix your problem, but government certainly does have a role in helping with problems. I mean, look at the transportation bill that they funded just to get past the current election. But if they really wanted to truly make a difference where this could include jobs, they would sit down and actually pass a reasonable transportation bill, not just fund it for the next 10 months.
Where do you stand on education funding, James?
I support Senator Warren's proposal to match student loan interest rates with that of which the banks receive. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now we're burdening our students, our youth that are attending college with debt that many of them are really not going to be in any shape to try to pay back. It's generally not something that they think of when they go into school. And I know Mr. Hunter did author a bill called the Student Know Before You Go Act of 2013. And Mr. Hunter actually mentioned this during the debate.
He did. He blamed Harry Reid and the Democrats and the Senate for not passing the bill. And I understand that's not exactly what happened to it.
No, I actually asked Mr. Hunter during the debate where the bill was. And he said it was caught up in the Senate. And actually, Mr. Hunter, that's not true. The bill is still sitting in the House. It's never
the Republican-controlled House wouldn't pass his bill.
It has not been taken up for a vote yet.
Interesting. As far as a more general philosophy of supporting public education, he obviously feels we don't need a federal Department of Education, that that's something that should just be left up to local governments to deal with. What is your view on that?
I certainly agree that the state should play more of a role in terms of public education, but that doesn't, again, doesn't exempt the government. It's like getting rid of the EPA, which I think Mr. Hunter would like to see go as well.
Yeah, Environmental Protection Agency, he does.
There are needs for these agencies. Do they need to
set some minimum standards so that maybe a child in Alabama would have the same minimum education standard required that a child in California or New York might be able to have?
Yes. Again, I see his point not wanting the federal government to step in on everything that states can run their own governments. But certainly the Department of Education does play a role.
Another thing he would like to defund and privatize is Social Security. What are your views about what he would refer to as entitlement programs?
Well, I'm retired military, and I receive a pension as well as have my health care benefits from the government, from the military. And I earn those, so those are not entitlements.
So you believe that Social Security is earned and that it should be protected?
Absolutely. But beyond that, I know, again, I as a health care provider, I see these. I would say probably at least 50% of my patients are receiving Social Security and Medicare. And if you're to go to privatize, you're going to create this whole new class of impoverished elderly people because they're on fixed incomes. I mean, these are not people you're going to tell them to go out and get another job or make more money.
Yeah. So what would the answer be for, you know, for balancing the budget? His argument would be, hey, we just can't afford this stuff. Where would you find the money to make sure that we can continue to fund Social Security and not have it run out of money?
Sure. Well, I just
and Medicare, you know, other benefits.
Sure. I stick with the Congressional Budget Office, top economists, and the Social Security actuary who have all said if we were to pass immigration reform, that is the number one thing that's going to shore up Social Security and keep it secure.
Interesting, because the people that are living here in the shadows right now who are already here working, of course, but they're not paying into the Social Security system. They may not be paying income taxes. So in other words, that would be a major revenue source for the government.
Absolutely. And this is what we've seen in the model examined by economists throughout the country. I know of none that disagree with this. And for the Republicans who will say, you know, the old saying, they don't pay taxes, well, this is a sure way to get them to pay taxes, and that will help shore up the Social Security program.
There you go. And, of course, the other side of the immigration coin is always border security. Mr. Hunter says that he wants to see strong border security before considering the immigration reform. Never is quite clear on exactly how much border security we need. But what are your views about securing the border?
Sure. I did mention this in the debate, and unfortunately, I guess I used the wrong word. I questioned Mr. Hunter about sitting on an immigration reform committee when, in fact, it is a caucus. So
yeah, and he denied it very adamantly. He said, no, I'm not on any immigration several times.
Well, that's okay. So we'll clear that up. But what's actually more interesting is there's a bill. It's actually the House H.R. 2220, which was sponsored by one of the members of the Immigration Caucus that Duncan Hunter is a member of. And this strictly deals with border security. And that has been Mr. Hunter's mantra from all along is border security, border security. But my bigger question is, this is a bill written by the caucus that you sit on by other Republican members, co-sponsored by 27 other Republicans, yet Mr. Hunter is not one of the co-sponsors of a bill drafted within his own caucus for something that he espouses all the time, border security. So it just begs the question, why aren't you co-sponsoring this bill?
Very good question. We hope that he'll come on the show, so we'll have an opportunity to ask him that one in person.
But I mean, just to go beyond that a little step, there is another bill, the H.R. 15, which was co-sponsored by a colleague of his, Jeff Denham, who's a Republican, also a veteran here in California. I believe it's District 10. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Denham, a Republican, but supports immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship. And again, this being a colleague of Mr. Hunter's, I would think he would want to work with somebody of his own party. It is a bipartisan bill. So you have a border protection bill. You have an immigration reform bill. Why aren't we addressing these?
Very good questions. Listeners, if you've tuned in late, we are speaking with James Kimber, who is the Democratic candidate running for the 50th Congressional District against the incumbent Congressman Duncan Hunter, here on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM. James, let's switch gears for a moment and talk about foreign policy. And, of course, the biggest foreign policy issue right now on everybody's radar is the situation over there in Iraq and Syria. I would like you to discuss your views about the military conflict over there and what you believe the approach should be. Congress, we might note, by the way, adjourned for 2-3 months here without voting on whether or not to approve a declaration of war, without voting on Congressman Juan Vargas's measure that would have raised the cap on Iraq refugees at a time when there's genocide and over 1 million people displaced over there. What do you think Congress should be doing about that situation?
Well, the short is I think Congress needs to get back to D.C. now and debate this issue and come up with an answer. But unfortunately, Congress did go on break. They did pass a CR to go ahead and fund the airstrikes.
Right.
And we all agree. I mean, I'm in agreement as Mr. Hunter and other representatives who are veterans. We don't want to see boots back on the ground in Iraq,
but
period.
Do you support the airstrikes against the ISIL terrorists?
I do support them at this point. I think not to do it sends a message, a dangerous message to the rest of the world that we're going to stand by and let these atrocities happen. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Hunter will say that this terrorist group, they don't have planes, they don't have warships, they don't have tanks, but neither did the people who attacked us on 9/11.
Yeah, Al-Qaeda. That's right. They had to hijack planes to pull that off.
They did not have an army, nor did they have planes, tanks, or Navy warships. But they were able to kill 3,000 of our people. So I think to do nothing, again, sends the message that America is just going to stand by and let this happen. But on the other hand, the question is, what is the long-term plan? Other than just funding this bombing campaign, which I understood Mr. Hunter to say, we should just do this indefinitely – you know, that is also the wrong message to send as well.
Let's talk about bombing for a moment, too. Mr. Hunter, in an interview on, I believe it was C-SPAN, might have been CNN, he has in the past, during the last conflict over in Iraq, he talked about supporting the use of what he called tactical nuclear weapons in the battlefield. What do you think about that?
Well, okay, and in all fairness, so this was an interview on C-SPAN, and he was asked about war against Iran, if he thought it was inevitable. And to his credit,
you're right, it was Iran, not Iraq. I misspoke.
He did say that, no, he did not feel it was inevitable. And really, I think he should have stopped right there. But unfortunately, he took it a step further and said, if we did, rather than boots on the ground, he was in favor of using tactical nuclear weapons. And then he was asked again about this earlier this year on another TV show, and he backed that up. The problem being, and Mr. Hunter actually went on to encourage those to look it up, to do their research.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. And, you know, the interesting research that I found was the general of the Air Force actually terminated that program in 2012 in lieu of conventional bunker buster bombs for two main reasons. One, the nuclear fallout, the radiation from the use of these types of weapons really just could not be controlled, despite that these are bombs designed to go below the surface. The other is a simple and, you know, very obvious answer is nuclear proliferation. You're not going to stop the development of more nuclear weapons if the U.S. starts using them in a justified, well, we're using this to stop another country from developing theirs. Other countries, Pakistan, neighboring Iran, is going to start using their weapons. North Korea, who has nuclear weapons. The terrorist groups are going to really try to get their hands on these.
That's a good point. If we, use of tactical weapons over there in the Middle East, what's to stop ISIS or ISIL, whatever we're calling them these days, what's to stop them from getting their hands on one?
But again, even the Air Force general in 2012, so 2 years before Mr. Hunter's comments, actually decided against this. So,
yeah. On another aspect of the nuclear issue, Congressman Hunter in the debate said that he does not believe climate change is man-made and does not believe we need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, even though 98% of the world's climate scientists agree that climate change is real and caused by man's activities. You had an interesting comeback to that. I'd like you to address that. And also his statement that if you want to go green, go nuclear.
Right. Well, I'd asked Mr. Hunter about whether he would want that nuclear waste deposited or buried out in his area, in Alpine or Julian. And he actually retorted by asking whether I knew that there were nuclear vessels down in the bay down here. And sort of I had to repeat myself as to say that what I was really referring to was nuclear waste. And he conceded that he did not want it in his backyard, yet he wanted it out in the Yucca Mountain repository. The problem with that is that in 2010, Congress stopped the funding for the Yucca Mountain Repository. And in 2011, Congress voted to shut that down, and Mr. Hunter actually voted for that. So
he voted for the shutdown, and yet in the debate he was standing there saying that this is where it should be sent. So all that nuclear waste that is stored right now at San Onofre, which has been permanently shut down, there's nowhere to send it.
Right. All facilities are now holding their waste on site.
And yet he wants to build more. That's his answer to the energy situation, is to build more nuclear plants.
Right. Because honestly, they do not have a way of dealing with the waste. I mean, they are putting the fuel rods in cooling pools.
Yeah.
But ultimately, those will become full, and then you have to go to another answer, which nobody really has, because nobody wants that in their backyard.
No.
Including Mr. Hunter.
As for climate change, 98% of the world's climate scientists agree that climate change is real and caused by mankind. You had an interesting analogy to that from your medical field. I'm wondering if you could repeat that for our listeners and then tell us what steps you think the U.S. should take to show some leadership on the climate change issue.
Sure. Well, I mean, from somebody who practices neurosurgery, simply put, if 98 neurosurgeons tell you have a brain tumor and need to have surgery, you don't want to listen to the two that say don't. As far as what the country should be doing, I think we should be following the lead that many other countries throughout the world are doing that are addressing climate change and using alternative energies. I heard the mayor of San Diego speak abundantly about how he wants to see water recycling. Interestingly enough, he really espoused using charging stations for electric cars, which is something Mr. Hunter said that Congress was not going to spend money on that or have any involvement in.
Interesting, yeah.
But we're talking about our energy for this country, which is part of national security. Mm-hmm. It's not a one-fix-all solution, just like the healthcare is not a one-fix-all. So alternative energy is not the only, but it is a big step towards becoming energy independent.
Let's talk about alternative or so-called renewable energy right now, because there's many different forms of that.
Yes.
Here in East County, it's a very hot topic. Our region was declared a federal energy corridor, and it's become basically ground zero for fast-tracking of large energy projects, specifically industrial-scale wind and solar projects, thousands of acres each. And what we're seeing in East County is that even a lot of residents and tribes and so forth who generally support renewable and who do think climate change is a serious problem, even they have raised concerns over these projects because of the destruction of public lands, the environmental damage, health concerns. Mm-hmm. There's people with 1,000 times, you know, the stray voltage that's considered normal coming up to their homes near these projects. Fire danger that they pose, harm to wildlife, loss of Native American cultural resources, and depletion of groundwater. Some mm-hmm. of these are mm-hmm. using massive quantities of groundwater in the construction. The fast tracking has left many people feeling like they don't have a way to stop even the most destructive of these projects. What I would like to ask is, what are your views about industrial wind and solar versus perhaps other alternatives? You do believe climate change is a problem. Is there a better solution to it than this?
Yes. I mean, I honestly don't think that, I guess, getting our money's worth in terms of when you're talking about these solar farms or the wind farms. When you simply look at other ways that we could do this, again, going back to commercial use of solar, again, going back to Mr. Hunter, who talked about federal government being able to incentivize or subsidize those who want to do it. But on a grander scale, when we're talking about really getting the best use out of alternative energy with solar, it's to go commercial and not with these farms of solar panels or these wind farms that are small, and as we've already discussed or you mentioned, they're really disrupting areas that it's causing problems that I guess were maybe unforeseen, but now that we see this, again, I'll liken it to the healthcare law. If you see a problem, then let's fix this.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of fixing problems, the drought is having a serious impact across California, and the agriculture industry is another one that has had its share of problems. So I know that you were telling me out in the lobby about mm-hmm. some steps you took to help one form of local agriculture. I wonder if you can repeat that story and tell us what else you think needs to be done to help local farmers and help address the drought situation as well.
Sure. Well, I mean, the issue I found out is there are quite a number of wineries throughout the 50th District, actually. If you understand the district, Temecula is part of it, and so in total there are mm-hmm. over 100. But most of these are very small, like home boutique wineries.
Right.
And as I visited them, they all had the same complaint, which is that there was an ordinance called a winery or tiered winery ordinance, which yeah. restricted the way they did their business. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like a very simple thing, and again, noticing that government is over-regulating. So I managed to get a meeting with Diane Jacob, the county supervisor, and the representatives from the Vintners Association, both in the Ramona Valley and San Diego Vintners Association came. We all met, and it was actually a pretty easy meeting. Everybody agreed that the ordinance was a bit overbearing. So there was an agreement made within the county supervisors as well as the Farm Bureau who agreed to modify or clarify the word so as to allow these people to do business without fear of either being fined or losing their jobs.
Right. So that's an example of government doing something proactively to help small business, in this case, the local wineries.
Absolutely.
What about the drought? Do you have any ideas specifically on that?
Sure. I mean, when you talk about the drought, again, going back to climate change or global warming, you can believe or deny, but the simple fact is California is facing very severe drought and likely will for the next several years. So what do we do? I've met with board members of Helix Water District as well mm-hmm. as Padre Dam, and they and other water districts throughout the 50th District are now recycling water. And coming from the Navy, we did this, so it's nothing new for me, but I realize it is for a lot of people. But what I learned is they are collecting almost 50% of the water, the wastewater, but they can collect it all. And this will go a long way. When you talk about the water that we receive from the Colorado, from the northern part of California, as much as we need to become more energy independent, we need to become more water independent.
Yeah.
Especially in an agriculture area such as we are. So water recycling, being able to improve those facility, and they're going to need federal dollars. I mean, again, Kevin Faulkner, the mayor of San Diego, was back in D.C. recently trying to get these dollars. And
so you would be a voice for bringing some of those federal dollars back to that.
Absolutely.
What about wildfires? Obviously a huge threat. They're saying this may be the worst fire season or one of the worst ever right now. I'm wondering, first, Are there any specific ideas you have for improving wildfire readiness? And second, do you have any ideas to address the very serious problem we've seen out here of rural fire stations not having enough volunteers? In some cases, we've had as many as 6 stations closed in one day. So even though the county has invested quite heavily in a lot more equipment and so forth, they have not been able to address this manpower shortage, largely because there are federal labor laws, as I understand it, that both require longer training, 6 months of training to become a volunteer, so-called volunteer firefighter. Sure. They do get a little stipend, but it's only $100 a day. Is it time to raise that or to, you know, do something so that this training could be done around somebody's regular job or to make sure that they have, you know, the gas money and so forth? Sure. Right now, there just seems to not be enough money and yet not enough manpower.
When you're talking about federal dollars, I mean, there always seems to be never enough money. Except for when they want to increase the border agency by doubling it, or if they want to bomb other countries, there seems to be funds.
Well, to be clear, even the county, even if they wanted to pay the volunteers more themselves, their hands are tied. Apparently, there are federal laws where they cannot do it because you run into some labor laws, and then they're considered a professional firefighter, and they'd have to be up at the union scale that CAL FIRE gets, and do we have room maybe for something in between there?
Sure. Again, I mean, I guess going back to something similar to the winery ordinance, I mean, as things develop, as we grow, I mean, this district is growing, and sometimes some of these were written have sort of outlived their purpose or their use and need to be modified, amended.
$100 may have been enough many, many, many years ago when that was put in. It was probably a lot.
But, I mean, in terms of other things that can help, I mean, I look at the fires that happened earlier this year up in San Marcos and Escondido, and fortunately they have been able to work with the military to come out and help. And I think we need to probably rely more upon that as well. I mean, Camp Pendleton is right there. You have a lot of Marines who are just great about getting out there. And if it's a matter of firefighting, using the helicopters to put out the fires, I think that may be a resource that we have to lean more on, or they need the funding that's required for that. Because right now, California as a whole, I think, has already exhausted their emergency funds for fires this year.
An important issue to roughly half the population is women's issues, and yet not a single question was asked about that at this debate. Representative Hunter voted against the Fair Pay Act for women.
Right.
He, when he was elected at first, said that while he was pro-life, that he would support exceptions for the life of the woman and rape and incest. And yet the first thing he did when he got back there was to introduce a bill that would have banned all abortions, even those where the life of the mother was threatened or where there was rape or incest. What are your views on some of these issues?
Well, okay. I mean, I've always been pro-choice, but it probably has more to do with being in the medical field. We do see a lot of things. We're actually trained in that during school to look at things very objectively, not to bring our own personal biases into this. With regards to the pay issue, I don't know why when statistically when the facts are right there that on average a woman earns 77 cents on the dollar.
Correct.
And that goes down depending upon that woman's ethnicity.
Right. That's U.S. Department of Labor statistics. If you, that's if you look pulled at, out of thin air there.
No. I mean, if you look at Hispanic, I mean, that's the lowest. And Hispanic woman earns the least amount.
Yeah. And, so, and yet Congressman Hunter had some interesting statements on that.
Well, I mean, earlier this year, he just said that gender inequality doesn't exist.
Does not exist. He doesn't see a pay disparity.
No. I mean, Mr. Hunter, born in a different era, seems to think that these are things that I guess went away back in the 70s or maybe in the 80s. And now that we're here in 2014, that these problems just don't exist.
I find it fascinating that even when there's an overwhelming amount of data, when the facts are there, the data is very, very clearly laid out. You know, as with global warming and 98%
healthcare
of the climate scientists.
We could talk about a lot of issues where the facts are glaring and people want to ignore them.
Very interesting. Another issue is that the Republicans in Congress universally voted to shut the government down. They would not fund it. This affected the credit rating of the United States. Yep. It certainly inconvenienced a lot of people. You know, a lot of fallback from that. We didn't have people in the control towers, some of the airport airports, lots of things.
Right.
What are your views about that? I mean, it comes back to this partisan divide. But if you were in Congress, do you believe that compromise is needed to prevent a government shutdown? Or do you believe there are issues where you would go to the mat like that if the other party was in power and you would say, no, we're going to shut the government down rather than have something that's on the agenda go through?
Well, I applaud anybody for taking a stance for something that they firmly believe in. However, when it comes to the budget, this wasn't something that just came up. I mean, Mr. Hunter and I both served in the military. So, you know, we both dealt with budgets. I did with my medical department. He did with his combat troops. But the budget is the same time every year. So for them to act as if on September 30th that this was just a big shock, I mean, why weren't they dealing it on August 30th or July 30th or June 30th? You know it's coming. I think this was a lot of theater to shut the government down. Unfortunately, many of the members of Congress voted to reopen the government on the 17th, but Mr. Hunter voted again to keep it shut down.
So it might still be closed if he'd had his way, huh?
Well, and you know, this didn't go well with anybody. You look about the $2 billion it cost us, the taxpayers. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce was not in support of the shutdown.
That's right.
I mean, there was not anybody that really was in support of this, and it didn't help anybody.
We went out at Oktoberfest. It was interesting. We did a man on the street thing. We simply asked people, are you affected by the shutdown, or is anybody in your family? And almost everybody was affected somehow.
Absolutely.
Maybe it was their vacation to the national park. Maybe it was their brother who worked for the federal government and didn't get his paycheck. But it really affected a lot of people. People were worried about wildfires with nobody in the air traffic control tower up there at Ramona.
Well, and not just, I mean, the defense contractors, which is a large base of the economy here in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the people that are involved in that type of that industry, but they live in the district.
Yeah, even uncertainties in the financial market.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who are some of your major endorsements?
I've been endorsed by the California Democratic Party. Individuals, I've been endorsed by Congresswoman Karen Bass out of Los Angeles, Congressman Alan Lowenthal out of Long Beach, the California State Assembly Speaker, Tony Atkins, Senator Alex Padilla is running for Secretary of State.
And how about organizations?
I've been endorsed by the California Teachers Association and the California Labor Federation.
Your opponent has not hosted very many town hall meetings in his district. Actually, I can only think of one that was in person quite a while ago, and he's relied on telephone town halls instead, where people call in and have to get past a screener to ask the question.
Right.
Would you handle that differently?
Absolutely. I don't think you can truly represent the people of the district unless you're out physically meeting them, and I really do think that a teleconference or town hall is just too impersonal, particularly if the questions are being screened. But actually, what I would plan to do is to hold at least one a quarter. Given the size of the district, I would like to do one up in Temecula, followed by one in Escondido or San Marcos to hit the middle of the district, and then one down south. But it's down here in East County, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no reason why you cannot get out there and meet. You may not agree with everybody, but you need to meet everybody.
Very good. Is there anything else, James, that you would like our listeners to know about yourself or your candidacy for the 50th Congressional District?
Yes. I think what I've been told my strongest suit is just meeting me. I've been out all over throughout the district, and I'll be doing that for the days all the way up to the election. And quite often what I meet is many people who just right away when they hear that I'm the Democratic candidate, they shut me off. But after sitting down and talking to me, and I'll famously remember a meeting up in Julian, a man up there actually let go of my hand when he heard that I was a Democrat, walked away. Somebody told him I was a veteran, so he came back and said, okay, what do you want? And we talked. And a half an hour later, we're still talking. We're talking about immigration reform, health care. He invited me in. We sat down, had a glass of wine. And then the next day I know, he was hosting a fundraiser for me.
Well, there you go.
And this is a Republican. I want people to know that I don't walk this party line. I'm here to work for the people. I want to represent the people of the district, but I want to represent all of the people of the district.
Where can people get more information about you and your candidacy?
Sure. Our website is www.kimberforcongress.com. We're pretty great on social media, so you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And usually that's where we post all our updates.
And again, we have also extended an invitation to Congressman Duncan Hunter, Mr. Kimbrough's opponent in this race, to join us on the show. And we haven't heard from him yet, but we certainly hope that he'll agree to come on and answer questions and let you hear from him directly about his views on the race as well. James, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County features Art in the Park, a Vintner's Harvest Festival, a Fair Trade Holiday Sale, and the Pumpkin Express, complete with a haunted train, among other attractions.
Plus, we'll have previews of some big events coming up later this month, from an Enchanted Garden Gala to the Borrego Days Desert Festival and Haunt Fest on Main Street.
So stay tuned for all of these events and more from East County Magazine. Artworks by over 43 award-winning artists depicting nature will be on display at Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation's annual Art in the Park event on Saturday, October 11, including many works for sale. Art aficionados can also savor craft beers and premium wines, as well as appetizers, Italian ice, and chocolates. In addition, guests can enjoy San Diego Native American flute music in Circa and Muses vibrational tones, as well as astronomy viewing with telescopes provided by the San Diego Astronomy Association. For more information on tickets and details, visit mtrp.org.
It's all aboard the Pumpkin Express at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo. The 10th annual Halloween seasonal rides take place Saturday and Sunday from October 11th through October 26th, with trains departing three times daily. Ride the rails to the Great Pumpkin Patch and then tour the haunted train, where each child gets to pick out his or her own pumpkin and decorate it inside a display building. Advanced reservations are required for this popular event. For ticket prices, reservations, and directions to the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum, visit psrm.org.
You're invited to join the East County Vintners Wine Group for the second annual Mountain Empire Country Harvest Celebration on Saturday, October 11th. The festivities take place at the Jim and Janet Wright Ranch and Vineyard in scenic Potrero. The festivities include a smoky barbecue with all the trimmings, wine samplings by local vineyards and wineries, plus a silent auction and door prizes. For tickets and reservations, contact countryharvest2014@gmail.com.
The Solar Optimists are holding a Bunko Bash in Lemon Grove on Saturday, October 11th at St. John of the Cross Social Hall. Proceeds benefit projects that help women and children in the community. For tickets, send an email to soloptimistgloria@gmail.com.
If you want to get an early start on your holiday shopping, Fairtrade La Mesa will host a holiday sale on Sunday, October 12th. This all-day event at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall, 7710 El Cajon Boulevard, will feature handmade artisan crafts, jewelry, coffee, and more. Fairtrade products help provide sustainable production and living wages for craftspeople around the world. Now, for a preview of coming attractions. The Julian Open Studio and Galleries Tour will be held on Saturday, October 18th. Visit the private studios of artists in the backcountry of San Diego. Meet and talk with the artists while enjoying their artwork. Maps and tickets are available at the Julian Town Hall on Main Street in the heart of the historic Gold Rush era town.
An Enchanted Garden Gala to benefit the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will be held on October 18th. Performance artists will entertain guests amidst illuminated gardens and a gourmet seated dinner. The program benefits the garden's educational programs and a new children's garden. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
The Shirt House Bluegrass Band will perform a free concert at the El Cajon Library on Saturday, October 18th at 2 p.m. The concert is presented by the San Diego Bluegrass Society and will feature folk, rock, gospel, and bluegrass music.
The third annual Hunt Fest on Main Street will provide thrills for all ages on Friday, October 24th from 5 until 10 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. The annual family-friendly event features live music on two stages. A costume contest will be held on the Main Street stage. There will also be expanded carnival rides and game area, a car display, a terror truck, candy trails, kids zone with outdoor movies, a balloon artist and face painting, performances by TNT dancers, Rubio's Performing Arts Studio, and St. Madeline Sophie Center. Other activities include crafts and game booths, a magic show, inflatable jumpers for kids, a pumpkin patch, and more. For information, visit huntfestonmain.com.
The Borrego Days Desert Festival takes place October 24th through the 26th in Borrego Springs as the community welcomes snowbirds to the desert warmth in the start of the fall season. Activities include a showing of the film Borrego Star Dance featuring time-lapse video of star formations, a parade, a flyover, live entertainment on the main stage, and a car show. Kids will enjoy a carnival fun zone with inflatable water slides and more. Visitors can also shop at arts and crafts vendors, savor foods including gourmet food truck items, beer, and a beverage garden. For more information, visit BorregoSpringsChamber.com/BorregoDays.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events sections online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County Show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.